The Left Side of the Bell Curve, written by Night Calling, read by One Lost One. Rating, teen and up audiences. Archive warning, no archive warnings apply. Fandom, our flag means death. Relationship, Blackbeard, Edward Teach, Steed Bonnet. Additional tags, fluff, handholding. Summary. Oh. The syllable tumbles out of Edward's mouth, a breathless exhale. He's peering directly into Steed's eyes. They're rather beautiful, two jewels shining underneath the chandelier's flickering flames. In truth, he did not think it was going to be this. Sorry, Steed says, eyebrows knitting together. Too close? Five times Edward and Steed's hands touch. Notes. CW for mentions of blood and a brief allusion to domestic abuse during Ed's childhood. God has a plan for all his children, his mother would tell him before prayer every night. Truth be told, Edward never understood the reasoning behind his rationing. In wealth, yes, but also in love, for love must exist if people speak so often of it. Years of his father pillaging his mother's heart taught him otherwise, so Edward has made a similar vocation out of pillaging the rich. After all, it didn't seem fair that a slim fraction of the population had the luxury to pursue anything other than a practical living. As such, when he first hears of Steed Bonnet, landowner turned pirate, his first emotion is that of disdain. Certainly, Bonnet was nothing more than a sniveling nobleman making a mockery of the Seven Seas, believing the currents to be as tame as a schoolyard. A little boy playing pretend, his scraped knees offering the only bloodshed. But the more Edward learns about this man, well-read, adventurous, sort of a lunatic, the more he feels compelled by him, just as the ocean called him in his youth. A pull, a longing, a desire to seek out the unknown. Fame and fortune, he had thought, would have been enough to quench the thirst. But this X-shaped hole has been building and building inside his chest for years ongoing, waiting to be filled with... what? He didn't know. Like a novice, he goes treasure hunting, curiosity piqued by where this particular map might lead him. At the end of the rainbow waits the most average-looking man, plucked straight out of a factory of thousands, unconscious and bleeding out from the stomach. Even after an hour of care, Bonnet's face is paler than the nightgown he's been changed into. The piece provides Edward the chance to study his loot. Those hands look smooth as porcelain, devoid of any trace of work. They're quite different from Edward's own, ugly popped blisters littering the tops of his palms, scars from too many sword fights, too many battles. Typical. Edward is a killer, and Bonnet, presumably, is not. One glance at him and it's easy to see. Only men like him could afford to indulge in frills and frivolities at sea. Even so, Edward finds himself wondering what those hands feel like. If they'd be gentler than the work-laden leather of his mother's fingers, or kinder than the rage-filled impact of his father's fists. In a surge of foolishness, he covers Bonnet's hands with his own. As expected, they're soft. Soft as, well, the closest comparison he has is the small patch of red silk, but it's not a perfect analogy. A coward would retreat. A hero wouldn't have entertained such thoughts to begin with. Bonnet mumbles in his sleep, and Edward withdraws his arms. For the remainder of the night, his fingers itch. Fiddling with his silk does nothing to soothe the nerves. Neither does downing a bottle of brandy. One sleep later, true softness in his vocabulary is redefined by the finest cashmere scarf that the world has to offer. Silk, apparently, is now a peasant's accessory. So he makes a vow, and that's to admire from afar. Unfortunately, Steed, it's Steed now, seems determined to blur the line that Edward has drawn in the sand. In the past, he used to be pretty darn good at predicting what's to come. Fast forward to present day, and something as mundane as the weight of Steed's presence behind him is sufficient to close off all exits. No, not that one. Steed points to a vague area on the table. That's the one you want. Edward throws up his hands. They all look the same. They do not. See, those tines are shorter than... A fork is a fork. Why make 20 of them for one meal? There aren't 20, and it depends on... Steed sighs. The fabric from his coat shuffles against the back of Edward's head, mussing his frazzled hair. Look, do you want to do this or not? Edward tries not to pout. Petulance is unbecoming of a leader. Yes. Wonderful. Splendid. Then, can I try something? Steed bows over Edward's shoulder, neck arching. His face is very close, cologne heavy and flowery, distracting Edward from noticing him lowering his hand onto Edward's until it's already happened. And Edward flinches. What? You've been holding this incorrectly. Steed curls his fingers around Edward's, coaxing Edward's tense grip into looseness. He picks both of their hands up, turning them at an angle. Like this. Before Edward can process the instructions or the warmth of Steed's hand, both are gone in an instant, poofing away in a cloud of nothingness. Now you try, Steed encourages. If Edward were a desperate man, he'd pretend he didn't hear or see a single thing, just so he can get Steed to demonstrate again. Instead, he relies on one of the few advantages he does have, and that's his rapid muscle memory. During the next lesson, Steed beams at him when Edward picks the correct fork and uses it properly, so it's not really that big of a loss in the long haul. Edward is sure that he heard incorrectly. Perhaps there's still some water swimming around in his ear canals from that morning's dive. What did you say? The waltz. Edward coughs. What? Waltz, repeats Steed patiently. It's a dance. I know it's a... That's a bit excessive, don't you think? Steed quirks his lips. I thought the whole point of attending the party was to be excessive. Edward flounders in place, feeling very microscopic in his layers and layers of blouses and waistcoats and overcoats. He had been over the moon when Steed invited him into the closet and threw garment after garment at him. But his new proposition had yanked him back to earth. But you're not really expecting me to do that, are you? It doesn't hurt to be prepared. What if you turn some lovely lady's head? Steed glances away briefly, fingers clutching the front of his lapel. Or gentleman. The only gentleman Edward is interested in turning the head of is the one before him. He ignores the weird flutter in his chest, attributing it to the heat. I highly doubt it'll come to that. You never know. Best to cover all the bases. Here. Steed steps closer, levitating his arms in a bloated circle. Either he's mimicking a ballerina or holding an invisible pumpkin. May I? That's Steed, ever so polite. Edward ducks his head, charmed against his will. Does this work regardless of the partner? As long as somebody leads. Steed smiles tentatively. Do you want to lead, or shall I? The implication of Steed leading anything makes Edward's mind spin. If it's similar to the way he leads his crew, scattered, lackadaisical, surely this will be a disaster. And yet, Edward remains intrigued. You can lead, he says, softer than he had intended. A wave of surprise passes over Steed's face. Perhaps he had been expecting to follow. A sense of satisfaction courses through Edward's veins. He does enjoy it when he catches people by surprise. Clearing his throat, he straightens his posture and waves his hand. Just for demonstration purposes, obviously. Oh! If Steed's widens his eyes any further, they're going to bug out of his skull. Right. Then I'm going to... You're not ticklish, are you? Pirates aren't ticklish. Steed looks affronted. I am. Edward tries not to sound too delighted. You are? Oh dear, I've admitted something dangerous, haven't I? Steed shakes his head. Never mind that. All right, so stay still, put your arms up, and I'll just scooch in, right? And Steed glides in, graceful as a swan, fitting one hand firmly into the dip of Edward's spine, the other into Edward's outstretched hand. Here, Steed whispers, looking up. Oh. A syllable tumbles out of Edward's mouth, a breathless exhale. He's peering directly into Steed's eyes. They're rather beautiful, two jewels shining underneath the chandelier's flickering flames. In truth, he did not think it was going to be this. Sorry, Steed says, eyebrows knitting together. Too close? I should have asked before I... Fine. Edward swallows around the knot forming in his throat and forces out a laugh. It's fine. It's... If that's how it's supposed to go, then you can't really change the waltz, you know? I mean, that's like telling someone to breathe differently or drink differently, and who does that? Yeah, right. Don't. Steve laughs along. Don't fix what's not broken. Right. Edward's hand is starting to burn where Steve is holding it, and they haven't even started this damn thing yet. He flops his other arm awkwardly, limp as a noodle. So, what do I do with... Oh, you could just put that... Steve directs Edward's left hand to perch on his shoulder, all while pulling him closer. See? Intimate. That's the word Edward was searching for earlier. He did not think this was going to be this intimate, but there's no turning back now. Just follow what I do, Steed says, already rearranging their feet, blissfully ignorant of Edward's moment of crisis. However tonight goes, Edward is sure of one thing. He's not going to want to dance with anyone else after this, the waltz or otherwise. He's determined to maximize his opportunity and wow Steed to the moon and back. On the first twirl, he steps on Steed's toes, and Steed laughs. Sometimes, when Edward finds himself in a moment of privacy and hidden from peeping eyes, he imagines leaning in all the way that night on the deck and kissing the ever-loving daylights out of Steed Bonnet. If he were given a second chance, he'd fall without hesitation, giving in to the X-shaped hole in his heart. For a split second, he thinks that he might never be granted that possibility again. Situations come and go, just as the tide pulls in and out with the moon. Thank the seven seas that Steed is a better student of piracy than Edward is of aristocracy. Ow! 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 Steed complains, hips jolting when Edward ties off the thread. Couldn't you have done that more gently? There's nothing gentle about combat. Edward drops the blood-soaked needle into the metal pan on the nearby table, returning with a roll of bandages. He sits down on the bed. Hold still. Steed eyes the bandages with trepidation. Is that going to hurt? Edward rolls his eyes. Only if you keep moving, so stop moving. Steed obeys for around 5 seconds, translating to 1.5 rotations of bandage around his torso, before he twitches on the bed again. Hey, not that this isn't nice, but can you... I said to stop moving. Yeah, but... Steed yelps. Oh, my lord. It can't possibly hurt that bad, Edward says, unimpressed. How Steed thought he could survive out here, Edward will never know. It's not that, it's... And Steed shivers, honest to God, giggling. Edward pauses mid-roll, captivated by the sound. Wait, what's happening here? I told you, I'm ticklish. No, you... Edward thinks back to the waistcoats and waltzes and warm hands. He begins to blush. Oh, right. Then do you want to do the rest yourself? Steed blinks at him slowly. I want you to do it. Are you sure? Because if you're going to keep wiggling around, I won't be held responsible for any pop seams. Steed nods his head, seemingly in an attempt to convince himself of his own words. And then he closes his eyes for some reason, and scrunches his nose, and licks his lips, and... Edward diverts all attention to the task at hand, eyes focused on the rise and fall of Steed's chest. Steady and rhythmic, nothing like the erratic heartbeat inside Edward's ribcage. Together they remind Edward of the billowing wind that accompanies the stormy sea. One cannot exist without the other. It's exciting and calming all at once, but above all, it sounds like home. Oh, that's not a thought he should be having. Picking up the scissors, he snips the bandage with shaking hands. That should do it. Steed opens his eyes, inspecting his body with a content hum. Thanks. Of course. As Edward is about to stand up, Steed slides his hand over Edward's. I mean it, says Steed. His voice is gentle and kind, just like his touch. Thank you. Edward stares at Steed's gaudy ring, the metal quickly heating up from skin contact. The wound has been dressed, the bleeding has been stopped. Unlike their cutlery lessons or their dancing lessons, there's no point to this motion other than the fact that Steed just, what, wanted to do it? Even after weeks in his presence, Steed remains a confusing man to decipher. It takes many more days for Edward to admit that Steed's hands are not as soft as they used to be. They've seen turmoil. They've seen strife. They've seen more danger than any nobleman might see in his lifetime. Edward never thought that he'd come to rue the day that they became equals. Steed deserves fine dining and fine clothing and a fine, frilly, frivolous life. Popped blisters don't suit a man as wonderful as him. Water drips from the ceiling and onto the wooden planks of the brig. Edward's pants are soggy with it, his chest with regret. "I'm sorry," he says. Beside him, Steed stirs, jittery as always. "For what?" "For getting us into this mess. You didn't do anything. I almost left you, abandoned you. But you didn't. Even if I was 1 second late, who knows what would have... But you didn't. As you said, you never left." Steed knocks his right knee into Edward's left thigh, forcing Edward to look at him. "Or were those just hollow words?" "Never," Edward says. Steed makes him want to give him everything. If there's even anything worth giving. "So you're here, then?" Somehow, Steed pushes closer, even with the tight rope already binding their ankles and wrists together. "You're here to stay." By now, Edward can tell when Steed is asking a question. He gazes onward into those deep eyes, deep as the sea, and answers, "I'm here to stay." "Well, good. I've still got so many things to teach you, after all." Steed turns his wrist until his palm meets Edward's. At first, it seems if Steed might be trying to twist his way out of the knot, but the moment he links their fingers together, it becomes apparent that Steed is content with staying in this position. Surely it must be uncomfortable, having his arm contorted in such an unnatural fashion. Sensing Steed's eyes on him, Edward lifts his head. There's a tiny amused smile on Steed's face, tingling every wall of Edward's stomach. Update, perhaps pirates can be ticklish after all. "And what's the practical use of this action?" Edward says. Steed's thumb ghosts over Edward's knuckles. "Nothing, really. To be close to another person, I suppose." "You're sitting next to me." Edward juts his chin between them to make his point. "Our legs are touching." "I am aware." "Foot to thigh. And our hips, you know, and actually our asses are pretty close too, and, well, so are our faces, but I don't know if that's because we're literally tied together, so you have no choice in the matter, or..." "Ed," Steed's voice is stern but fond, "do you like it?" Of the countless men that Edward has encountered, both on land and on sea, Steed's shorter stature places him firmly on the left side of the bell curve in terms of expected height. The elongated coats that he frequently wears doesn't help the matter. Instead, they tend to flow behind him, swishing back and forth whenever he's particularly animated, twirling him up in a tornado until he's lost in the crowd. Inconsequential, easily written out. But in the space that Steed takes up in Edward's chest, it stretches on for nautical mile after mile, all the way to the distant horizon. The grandest of Edward's boyhood dreams had been to sail to the end of the ocean, to be the first to discover the precise longitude and latitude where the sun dips to meet the moon. Funny thing about that, neither the maps nor the stars could have foreseen themselves being course-corrected by one Steed Bonnet, filling his sails with generous personality, rewriting the ink, and rearranging the galaxy overhead. "Yes," Edward finally finds the courage to say. He leans his forehead against Steed's, smiling. "I do like it." Steed laughs, little rumbles skipping across Edward's chest. "That's a relief, because I fancied doing this for a while. The situation just made it a bit easier to jump in, is all." Well, that certainly leaves no ambiguity on the matter. Edward nudges Steed's face with his nose, tilting it so he can... Steed turns away. "No." Edward blinks, dazed. "No, but I thought... We're not having our first kiss while being locked up as prisoners on our own ship. No, siree. I mean, this isn't the worst timing for..." Edward pauses. "Our ship?" Steed is already wriggling them towards the padlock, paying no heed to Edward's increased heart rate. "Come on, man. Help me escape so we can snog in a proper bed." Bed. From the moment Edward first laid eyes on him, Steed's sleeping figure, his translucent skin, his long eyelashes, but in this context, A much more provocative vision plunders the depths of his mind. Steed, sprawled out amidst plush pillows, buttons torn away, chest glistening underneath the moonlight. Yeah, that's something worth fighting for. You're right. He squeezes Steed's hand before letting go, knowing that it won't be long before he'll get to hold it again. Let's get the hell out of here. Thank you for listening.